Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
What do Senator Harry Reid, Tiger Woods, and Precious have in common? I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer, and that is the question my next guest poses in his new book, Brainwashed, Challenging the Myth of Black Inferiority. Tom Burrell is a 45-year veteran of the advertising industry and an inductee to the Advertising Hall of Fame, but now he's turning his attention to the images of black Americans and their genesis, which he says can be traced back 400 years to the days of slavery. That's when what he calls the Black Inferiority, White Superiority brainwashing campaign began. Tom Burrell, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jamie. Thank you for having us.
So let's start right there. The Black Inferiority, White Superiority brainwashing campaign. Well, that's some pretty strong language.
It's pretty strong language, and it has very strong implications for what things are going on today. It was a bill of goods that was sold to all of us at the beginning and the founding of this nation, the idea, the lie of the myth of black inferiority. It was a myth created to justify slavery within a democracy. The whole concept of the contradiction of slavery and democracy had to be reconciled. And the way that was found to do that, to be able to say that all men are created equal and still maintain slavery, was to demonstrate that those people who didn't look like white people were inferior beings, somehow not as good as, not as human as. And so that is the beginning of the selling of the myth of black inferiority, one of the greatest advertising marketing campaigns of all time. And it actually worked. You know, when you make a claim, you got to put some meat on those bones. You get to, okay, now we've got to substantiate that claim. It was such a far-fetched claim that they had to make up all kinds of myths to justify it. And they did that through propaganda and through media. And as the media was developed, starting with text from in the Bible, text in textbooks, text in science books, and then as media was further developed into pamphlets and posters and ancillary media like salt shakers and pepper shakers, and going all the way through, as media was developed, this myth was folded into that format. So even as you have television today and video games, that myth is perpetuated.
And as you note in the book, Thomas Jefferson, one of our great founders, though well acknowledged to be conflicted, wrote, quote, are inferior in the endowments both of body and mind. 5 years after he wrote, quote, all men are created equal. So when you say, Tom Burrell, that this bill of goods was sold to all of us, you don't mean just to African Americans, black American slaves. You mean to all of us, including white Americans.
Keep in mind that before there were things, there were people who were white indentured servants. There was more of a class issue in this new America than there was a race issue. And whites and blacks worked together as indentured slaves and slaves. And what the white ruling class had to determine is that, wait a minute, we can't have this. We've got to turn this class issue into a race issue. Otherwise, we will be outnumbered. So the propaganda began to say, hey, you people, you white people are more like us. We have basically disowned you before, but now you're one of us. So let's hate those other people because they are not like us.
And yet we fast forward now to the year 2010. This is supposed to be the, quote, post-racial era, right? I can already hear the calls coming in. And listeners, we are going to take your calls in just 1 minute. But I can hear the folks saying, we elected Barack Obama. Haven't we crossed this bridge? And yet, Tom Burrell, in your book, you say the so-called post-racial society is just a myth.
It's a myth. It's an illusion. And it's a very handy illusion because there's a kind of a paradox of progress. What we see as we look at all of the major statistics having to do with how we are doing, educational achievement, health issues, homicide issues, early childhood, obesity, I mean, all the way through, we as black people still remain at the top of almost all the bad lists.
Or at the bottom, as the case may be.
Or at the bottom of the top of all the bad lists and the bottom of all the good lists.
Right, and you break each one of those down chapter by chapter,
right.
Healthcare,
right.
Education,
right.
Et cetera.
Yeah, we have chapters covering the 10 major questions that we are dealing with. Relationships, family. We have a chapter called Studs and Sluts. Why do we allow ourselves to participate in the perpetuation of black sexual stereotypes? We have a chapter called Uglified, which basically asks the question, why is black and beautiful considered a contradiction? We have a chapter called Homicide, which basically has to do with why we kill each other. Slow Suicide, why do we basically... Why do we harm ourselves? Why do we continue to abuse our minds, bodies, and spirits? These will do. Why do we allow ourselves to accept lower standards and expectations for ourselves? Disunity, why can't we stick together? Bread to be led, why do we allow our leaders to basically mislead us? Neocons, why is the joke always on us?
Which focuses a tremendous amount on media. But you do end... The last chapter is on a hopeful note with recommendations, and I want to get to that.
Right.
But I want to talk about some specifics within each of those chapters, and let's talk very specifically with some recent and major examples.
Okay.
And of course, I have to go to and very prescient the book is because you somehow managed to spend a lot of time on this movie Precious, which just this week got so much attention at the Oscars. The book comes out. The movie is talked about this very week. Of course, Monique wins for Best Supporting Actress for her role. Jeffrey Fletcher wins for his screenplay. There's this other movie, Blindside, right?
Yes.
And all of the attention that these films receive. But you have a very different take on the media in general and specifically of the film Precious. Quite a different view from the popular take. Why?
Well, here's why. You're talking about art. When I talk about those figures, where black people stand in America on that pathology list, let's connect the dots. We know that images are powerful, that images can change people's attitudes, change their behaviors. We know that. The other thing that we know is that there is a real problem in America with where blacks stand in our society. You put those two things together. You know images are important. So the question becomes not how good is the acting, how well written is the script. The question becomes, does this image, do these words, do these pictures move black people ahead or move us back? Because we're talking about lives at stake. We're talking about human lives at stake. So is it worth having great art if it, in effect, is contributing to killing people? So when you look at a movie like Precious, that becomes the question. My answer is that it does not move us ahead. It moves us back because it reinforces a lot of negative feelings that both black and white people feel about black people. It piles on stereotypes that are considered black stereotypes, then it takes stereotypes that aren't even ours and adds to it. I have never heard of it being said that in the black community, black mothers are sexually molesting their children. Black mothers. I have not heard of it said that black grandmothers, as was Precious's grandmother, a cowering, meek figure in the background, not interfering with her grandchild being abused. So it's stereotypes of convenience, basically heap on all of the negative perceptions that can be heaped on a group of people. But there are subtler signs. We get this all the time, Jamie. We get it from morning on. We get it in radio, television, movies, and so forth. And it's subtle because you look at a movie like The Blind Side, which some people consider much more favorable an image than Precious. So let's look at it. Here we have a black kid who first is abandoned by his natural family, black family. Then he goes to his coach and his wife, and they let him sleep on the couch for a little while, but they can't handle him, so they put him out. Who comes in to save the day? The white family. And then from there, this kid is basically being shown protecting his beloved white parent from that menacing black group of thugs.
So would no images at all be better than these images?
Well, that's a good question. You know, when we started our company, there were practically no images at all in television commercials.
And again, we should remind our listeners that you were an advertising executive.
Right.
At a time when very few images of black people existed in advertising, when you turned on the television, you'd see images of white people in television commercials, and now you're in the Advertising Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. So are no images better?
I think that no images are better than bad images. The best images are images that are positive images. What no images say is that you don't exist. What bad images say is that you exist in a very bad way.
Within the myth of black inferiority, which you are writing about, which gets me to the question I ask before I have to take the break, which is about rap and hip hop, which you talk about throughout the book.
Absolutely.
And I have to ask this question because in the paper today and in the news today and yesterday was Lil Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
Lil Wayne, whose real name is Dwayne Carter Jr., was back in court here in Manhattan yesterday. He pleaded guilty to attempted possession of a weapon in connection with a gun that was found on his tour bus in 2007, and he was sentenced to 1 year. But that's not the real news, in my view, for our conversation. The real news was the spectacle outside the courtroom. A couple hundred fans, photographers, SUVs, all descriptions. There was chaos down there, all to get a photograph or an autograph of this kid who also goes by the name Weezy, I'm sure you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he's there for a criminal court appearance. Now, mm-hmm. you talk throughout the book about these young men as role models, as heroes. Do they represent something political and radical and militant, or are the young people who are following these kids simply confused about who their heroes should be?
They are certainly confused about who their heroes should be. Look, here's what happened. We were brainwashed. We talk about that in the book. What that means is that we were brought here. And it's only a few generations ago. We're not talking about ancient history. We were brought here stripped of everything, our culture, our history, our family. We didn't know who we are. We lost our name. We lost our home. Okay, so now that you've got this beautifully stripped down specimen, this product, which is what we were, now you start brainwashing. So what that means is that we receive these signals a lot easier because the superego is not built up to say, okay, wait a minute, he's just acting. So the big hero for a black kid who is broken is the rapper. And what the rapper is saying is that I'm a con and I'm a thug, and what I sing about is going out and killing people. So you and this kid has access, as poor as he is, he has access to a gun. So why are we surprised that there is no connection, that there is a connection between what Lil Wayne is saying about what he wants to do to all the girls in the world, what he thinks about, you know, women, what he thinks about killing another person, particularly another person like him, and be surprised that we actually go out and do that? It's a perfect setup for that. So being in jail is a badge of honor because it's a badge of honor for him. So it's a badge of honor for all the kids. So it's basically a part of the brainwashing, and it's a part of how we participate in perpetuating that.
All right. Now, when we come back, I'm going to ask the Obama question.
Okay.
Because we're in 2010, President Obama's in the White House, and I know when the callers call in, that's the first thing they're going to bring up. When we take a break, we're going to ask our callers to call in. We want to hear from you on this. Have you seen specific images that you feel reinforce the images of African Americans as inferior, or perhaps contradict the premise? Our number is 212-433-WMYC. That's 212-433-9692. Or you can post a comment on our webpage, WMYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We'll be back in just a moment with more of our conversation with Tom Burrell, author of Brainwashed, Challenging the Myth of Black Inferiority. We'll take your calls. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer. Welcome back to the Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian today, and my guest is Tom Burrell, author of Brainwashed, Challenging the Myth of Black Inferiority. Tom, what do you mean when you say black people are not dark-skinned white people?
What I mean by that is that because of the fact that we came to this country in a totally unique way, we came to this country unlike any other group of people, against our will, and held in bondage and basically tortured and humiliated and vilified, that led to a set of needs, what we call need states, led to attitudes, behaviors that are particular and unique to us as African Americans. And that leads to behavior and manifestations in the marketplace and in the world of art and culture and various other areas. So we have to understand that we are not dark-skinned white people. And this whole idea of comparing what we are doing versus what white people are doing, we have to understand that we're coming from a further place. So we have to think in terms of ourselves, not relative to other people, but relative to ourselves and relative to our own potential.
We have a question specific to manifestations in the marketplace, as you put it, Tom Burrell. Keith in Manhattan is calling. Keith, you're on WMYC.
Yes, hello.
Hello, Keith.
Bravo, Mr. Burrell. I think that, yes, the image is very, very powerful. And I wonder if you could speak to that. What I have seen is when you go into Macy's in the hip-hop section, there is a police officer, a uniformed police officer, standing in front of the hip-hop section, but we're still shopping there.
Yes.
And if you watch the news, if you see something about some horrendous crime that a white person does, immediately there is something about even more horrendous crime that an African American does. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that you said what you just said before, you know, you got my question, because it did sound like to me that you were using white folks as the barometer. of what we should do, but I'm glad that you did clear that up. So if we are dealing with the image as it refers to consumerism, I mean, people are still, you know, we're still spending our money in places that really don't seem to be investing in a positive image for us. So, and those are two powerful forces if you're dealing with the, you know, image and if you're dealing with money. Mm-hmm. So what's the answer to that?
Well, the answer to all of this, of course, I want to say first the answer is to read this book, because I really believe that this book not only cites the problem, traces the problem to its genesis, but most importantly, I would not have written this book had we not had a very clear idea of what the solution should be. The solution to all of these things, Keith, is basically to turn negative imagery back and move positive imagery forward, positive propaganda forward. We've got to change the balance and build up a critical mass. That's why we have set up a website, stopthebrainwash.com, where we can have people give us their ideas and be watchdogs and say, hey, this is what I saw. Now, once you read this book, you will never look at images the same of black people or words about black people without asking that question that we all have to ask. Does that move us forward or does it move us backward?
And you have an entire chapter specifically on the consumer question. Why can't we stop shopping is the question.
Yes.
You pose,
right.
Buy now, pay later.
Right.
But the themes you raise in that chapter are throughout the book about the psychology of African Americans. It's part of that chapter, but throughout the book.
Yes.
Now, of course, the Obama question comes up. Tom in Brooklyn Heights, you're on with Tom Burrell.
Hi.
Hello, Tom. Hello.
I agree that I think movies really are... they have a very powerful effect on the American psyche. And I think the thing about President Obama, that his election is not really the important thing. The fact is he's a brilliant guy, and he was the best guy for the job, and that's why he got elected. But the fact now that you see every day in the news a brilliant guy leading the country, being smart, being intelligent, being really well-poised, and when you look at him, he is a black man, I think that really creates a place in the American psyche where Americans in general become more ready to see more people like that, especially in the movies. And I hope in the next, you know, 10, 15 years, you see a lot more protagonists who are like your sort of classical movie protagonist, but they just happen to be black, and that doesn't really matter to the movie. And that itself is really what's going to change the way Americans see race relations. And, mm-hmm. and I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, well, one of the things I want to say about the Obama image, we see already that there has been a very positive effect on black people, particularly black kids, and even more particularly black boys, with a black president like Obama in the news. And the reason I say like Obama is because Obama is not only black, but Obama is a pretty cool-looking dude. You know, he's tall, he's got a little swagger to him, he's got this great voice. He even has a little bit of remnant of the kind of hood in his, you know, that speaks every once in a while to us. And a little bit of a swagger in his walk that says, hey, you
confidence.
Know, I'm pretty cool. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have seen actually performance levels increase with the election of Obama. But here's the problem, though. The bombardment of negative images is not even something that the leader of the free world can compete with. We are bombarded constantly, not just with movies, television, newspaper, radio. Every place we go, we are getting that reinforcement, and it's now at a point where it doesn't have to be malicious anymore. It's insensitive.
It's in the fabric
right.
of our America. We've talked about the Obama effect on the American fabric. What about the effect of the American fabric on the Obama presidency? There's been a lot of talk about reaction to his policies, reaction to the man himself, and whether the fact that he is black affects the presidency. What's your view on that?
I really believe that given the fact that we have, and I don't want to get too much into politics, but given the fact that we have Republicans.
I had to ask the question.
We have Republicans so intent on putting Obama down that they're voting against their own ideas previously proposed. So there is that reaction. We notice that, and we also notice that while Obama is moving forward, there has been an onslaught of attack on other black figures. You know, I mean, it's just amazing with the Patterson, the Rangel, the whole slew of what you call white what's it flashback
backlash
backlash. You know, I think there is a concerted effort, and I don't know that everybody is conscious of it. The idea that they're really going after this guy. Because in some ways they feel that he tricked them.
Well, indeed, your book stresses, when you talk about white supremacy, your book stresses that whites as well as blacks have been influenced negatively by the black inferiority campaign.
Absolutely. It's,
can you say more about that? How is it a negative thing for non-African Americans?
It's a negative thing for non-African because there is that lingering, languishing issue of race in America. There is the intergenerational white guilt combined with the black shame that basically keeps us from moving ahead. There is that little slight discomfort that makes people feel like they have to create these negative images in order to feel better about themselves. You know. The black sidekick as opposed to the leader, the faithful servant, the person who likes white people, you know, so that we need there's that edge of discomfort that just lingers and languishes and goes from generation to generation, just like a family recipe. We need to get rid of that.
And the only way to do that is to talk openly and honestly about it, as you are doing in this book.
We have to talk openly and honestly about it.
Jane would like to talk openly and honestly about it. She's in Manhattan. Jane, you're on WMYC with Tom Burrell.
Hello, thank you. One of the things that always disturbed me, and since you're in advertising, Mr. Burrell, this is particularly speaking to your area, is the fact that in commercials, which people see all the time, African Americans speak this sort of ghetto patois, and I am an African American woman. I do not hear people who speak like me. I do not hear people who speak like my friends and family. I do not hear people who speak like you. I hear them dropping final G's. Always, always. And if they are in a drama, in a soap opera, in a comedy, in a scripted program, that seems to be the case as well. They speak inferior English, and it bothers me greatly. And since as an advertiser, that's something you have had an influence on, how do you see this, and how do you see the continuing practice of it?
I saw that very, very clearly. And it speaks a little bit to the point that I just made about feeling comfortable. We as Americans are comforted by people acting predictably and acting, staying in their place, so to speak. So there is that kind of dumbing down to make people feel comfortable on both sides. So, but here's the other thing, to your point. I raised the issue of a Nike commercial. I don't know if you watch sports, but there's a Nike commercial with two puppets. One is a puppet of LeBron James, and the other is a puppet of Kobe Bryant. And they are constantly talking to each other, and they talk in the broadest, most exaggerated black dialect. So first of all, so you got two dummies here, right? And then you have them talking in the broadest dialect. Now, I hear Kobe Bryant talk. I hear LeBron James talk all the time. They don't talk like that.
Of course. I was struck by, just to bring up one particular product, Pine Sol. Silly commercial.
Absolutely.
But when those commercials started with that heavy-set, dark-skinned black woman, I was struck by how beautifully she spoke. And then suddenly she became a sort of ghetto mama.
Yes.
Somewhere along the line. They changed the portrayal, not the portrayal of the woman, but the way she spoke.
She became more like the Aunt Jemima syrup woman.
Well, yes, she became a modern version of that.
Yes.
And she was not that in the beginning, because I was struck by the commercials and I thought, this is a trained actress.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I was on the other side of that, and I had to basically fight that issue many times with some clients, the idea that, well, that's not broad enough, that's not black enough.
Yes.
You know, and
your screener, let me add, asked me twice, are you African American?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that, you know, that's the whole thing. You're supposed to act and talk in a certain kind of way, you know, and so that happens constantly. It happens in our programming. Look at a program like 30 Rock.
Exactly.
Wildly popular, and it has a subtext to it, a black subtext, which is like another thing going on. There was one segment where they had the guests, Whoopi Goldberg and the other woman on The View, the black woman on The View,
Sherry Shepherd.
Sherry Shepherd was playing the role of the girlfriend or ex-wife of Tracy Morgan, who is, you know, with all due respect, about as close to Step and Fetch It, Mantan Moreland, as you can find.
Yeah.
You know, and he gets a lot of play because people, including white people, you know, love it.
Probably so white people.
So in this one segment, he is playing the role of an irresponsible father who doesn't want to take responsibility for his kids. They go through a little kind of Butter Beans and Susie thing from the 1930s. You gonna get your hair did? Yeah, I'm gonna get my hair did. Yeah, I got to get my hair did. You know. So after that, he's sitting in Whoopi Goldberg's office, talking to her, sees all of the little statuettes, awards that she's won, asks for a glass of water, and she goes to get him a glass of water. He tries to steal two of the awards.
Oh.
She comes back, and here's, I listened to this three times. Here's what she says. Colored man, put those down. She said, colored man, put those down.
My.
So here in one 22-minute segment, we get the irresponsible father, the buffoon, the clown, the thief.
And the ignoramus.
Now, Jane
and
Tom.
Right.
I am going to weigh in. Now, I don't regularly watch 30 Rock, so I did not see that segment. And I have to say, I take some issue with the Tracy Morgan character myself, and I am one to write to television shows when I find characters, especially black characters, offensive. But there is a writer on that show who is African-American and Harvard-educated and might argue that, as sometimes people do when they collect memorabilia or participate in historical comedy, that this is something that reflects our history. What would you say to that? It gets sort of back to the Precious conversation.
Well,
I guess you'd say no image is better than...
Well, first of all, let me say about the Harvard-educated image.
I knew you'd have an image, an answer to that.
What media does with people, black people who are smart, is we make fools out of them. You know, here, this Harvard-educated is the butt of the joke. What he basically does...
I believe it's a woman.
No, the Harvard, there's a, you're talking about the writer on the staff
in
the show.
Is it a man? Is it a man?
In the show.
Yeah.
Yes, he's a guy. And he's the guy that they make fun of because he is so out of touch with the real world. So they come into him and say, well, we want to write a script about, you know, something that is happening in the world today, and then he goes off and he starts quoting Lord Tennyson or something.
So that does not satisfy the balance for you.
Oh, well, what it does, it's the opposite. It basically says being smart is not cool. And that goes all the way back even
yes.
to the days of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Or even to the days of educating the slaves.
Well, I'm talking about the characterization yeah. of smart people as nerds, as objects of derision. The little round guy who is the smart guy.
I remember him.
You know, he's the butt of the
I'm
joke.
I'm old enough to remember him.
The guy who you have to get to try to study and who likes, you know, just hangs out with the girls and stuff, and he's tall and he's cool. He's the hero. So that goes back to that chapter, D's Will Do. You know, this whole idea of
now,
expecting
now,
less of
now, speaking of chapters, and, you know, we never have enough time, your last chapter, and I cannot let you go without talking about it, is entitled Yes, We Must.
Yes.
It's a prescription for change.
Yes.
And you list 10 antidotes. We can't go through them all because I've already gone over my time. But give us a summary, because it's a hopeful chapter.
Absolutely. I believe that we can overcome and eradicate the myth of black inferiority in America. And I think we can do it given the fact that images got us into this and images can get us out. And now, today, we have the power. We have the power tool in our hands. We don't even need a computer. We need a library card to get to a computer. And we can create our own images. In that computer is a movie studio, a video studio, a recording studio, and given the creativity that we have been compelled to have in order to just to survive in America, we can start to take charge of our own image. And we, with the education provided in this book, have the tools to say, okay, now we are going to take over our image. We can do it today. And tomorrow have 300,000 hits on YouTube, and ABC, NBC, CBS will be calling you to say, okay, I saw this very positive thing that you did. I want you to come on our show because we need the ratings. So the tail is wagging the dog now. If we just basically take charge of our own image and first understand that we have to do it for ourselves, and not wait for other people to do it for us, because part of the healing involves our understanding that we have the power within us to change the place where we are in society.
Well, we thank you for coming on our show, and we have to leave it there. My guest has been Tom Burrell. The book is Brainwashed, Challenging the Myth of Black Inferiority. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Up next, the story of stuff, why all that stuff you have may not be good for you or the planet. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer.